Christ Jesus, the image of the invisible God. For unto us a child is born. The titles of Christ, Good News of Great Joy, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christ-focused themes offered by Ad Crucem this Christmas. Shop adcrucem.com for greeting cards, gifts, housewares, ornaments, music, and much, much more. Available from adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through word and art. Adcrucem.com, adcrucem.com.
If we're serious about the Christmas season, now's a good time to reflect on those who are strangers in our midst and remember what it was like to be a stranger.
We don't want this willy-nilly kind of, yeah, Joe, get up and preach this week. Wow, you got a real gift. Great, got a gift. Let's make sure that he's qualified to use it well.
The trellis of Trinitarian worship has fallen into disrepair, and now you have a generation that when you treat the doctrine of the Trinity in 2 weeks of catechism class, their eyes glaze over.
These guys really think that the message is conveyed in their trickery or their theatrics rather than in the actual message that Christ bled and died for them.
Pro Football Hall of Fame wives, love issues, etc.
This is kind of weird. Anglicans are not known for being speedy. They're not known for hurrying to do anything. In fact, Anglicans are probably more well-known, perhaps even notorious, for talking things to death, endlessly discussing things. Now, change does take place, but it takes place in a lot of ways glacially. At least that's my perception up until recently of Anglicanism. And then the Church of England, after 20 years of having female priests, decides that it's, and this was not that long ago, the Church of England decided this, let's see, a month ago, to announce that it would be accepting female bishops, not just priests, but bishops. And lo and behold, it's just been announced as of today, a closely guarded secret, we're told, that was held back and announced by Downing Street after being approved by none other than the Queen, that the first appointment of a female bishop has taken place. Libby Lane, a 48-year-old mother of two, and she's going to be the next bishop of Stockport in Greater Manchester. And this comes with legislation working its way through the Parliament to fast-track female bishops' appointments. They're hoping that by New Year's Day, they will have the first female clerics, and by very soon, before the general election, there will be more female bishops joining her. Why the hurry? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Bishop Keith Ackerman will join us here for a few minutes to talk about the naming of the first female bishop in the Church of England. A little bit later, we'll talk about the secular Advent on television, the holiday movie as kind of the civil religion celebration of the holiday season. Terry Mattingly, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, will be our guest. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will round off this hour. We're going to deal with two stories. One, the killing of 145 people, 132 children, by the Taliban at a school in Pakistan, and the killing of two hostages by a Muslim cleric in Australia. That'll be the last 15 minutes of the program. You can join us for the next hour. Questions or comments are welcome. 1-877-623-MY-IE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc, or our beloved and on-demand listeners, use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the first female bishop in the Church of England, Bishop Keith Ackerman. He's vicar of St. Timothy's Episcopal Church in Fort Worth, Texas. Spent 14 years as bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Quincy, Illinois, and he's president of an Anglican reform group called Forward in Faith. Bishop Ackerman, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Good to hear your voice. Happy Advent.
You Anglicans are not known for hurrying into anything.
That is an understatement and well said.
What's the rush now in the Church of England to get female bishops? What are the forces driving this? Are they political? Are they ecclesiastical? What's going on?
Almost totally political. I think what listeners oftentimes may not know, and I've talked about it before when I've been with you, is that the Church of England is a very unusual animal in as much as it's the state church. And there are two things that I think are really in play here. Number one is the current Archbishop of Canterbury sees himself as a real entrepreneur and peacemaker all in the same moment. And at the same time, because this is a state church, we're dealing with a parliament. And with general elections coming up and other sorts of possibilities on the horizon, there are those politically motivated individuals who want to hurry up and get this done before somebody changes their mind. An example would be what happens in Washington, D.C., before a new Congress goes in. Try and get as much done as you possibly can before a new Congress gets in. That would be a great deal of what we're looking at.
Now, the impetus obviously didn't come up 4 weeks ago. It's been 20 years since the Church of England ordained its first female priests. Was it assumed at the time that eventually that would mean female bishops as well?
Well, let's say that those of us who understood the American scene knew of the inevitability. But let's just also say at the same time, in the Church of England, there were a number of people who said it would never happen here.
Why?
Surprise. Well, on two points. Number one, because it is a state church, that means a seat in Parliament. It means being able to have a peerage, if you will. And there were many people in the society who would have thought that that would have been inappropriate. But obviously the majority at this point are thinking that it's a very desirable situation and that it will indicate how progressive both the UK is politically, but also how progressive its state church is. You see the same thing happen in Sweden.
Just outline that for us a little. It's a state church where politics have driven changes in the church?
Absolutely. The state church in Sweden, which has been disestablished now, I might add, actually got to a point where what would happen when it came time for an appointment of a bishop, they had already worked out their male-female ratio when it comes to bishop appointments.
Do you expect the same thing in the Church of England? Do you expect there to be, well, it sounds like what we're talking about here is kind of a quota. Political bodies operate sometimes with gender quotas. Would you expect the same to eventually evolve there?
Yeah, I'm afraid I do. I think what we're looking at is the unraveling of the Anglican Communion, and I think that we're also seeing the unraveling of the Church of England. I think what's on the horizon is eventually the Church of England will be disestablished, not unlike the Church of Wales. And I think what that will mean is being devoid of that contact, that no longer will there be political appointments, but it'll all be of bishops, but it'll be done within the context of the General Synod of the Church of England exclusively.
Very recently, Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, has expressed doubt that not only with this decision, that not only is it going to be hard to keep Anglicanism together, he's expressed doubt as to whether or not there will be another Lambeth Conference. What are your thoughts there, Bishop Ackerman?
I believe he's right on target. I think he's a pragmatist. And I think, first of all, it's quite likely that Anglicanism is going to somehow begin to go in so many different directions that it won't be able to be held together. Canterbury is no longer seen, although it is titularly so, seen as the center of Anglicanism. The Global South clearly has not only the numbers, but it also has the life that is essential for a church to grow. Whereas in the Church of England, the church attendance alone is absurd. What I mean by that is it's almost as if the Church of England has attempted to do just about anything that it can for the Church of England to survive, and from all accounts, the Church of England will not be able to survive.
I guess the flip side of that is, does the Southern Hemisphere sector of Anglicanism, does it have the vitality to continue without essentially the Northern Hemisphere, with the very few exceptions like, you know, small provinces in North America? Does it have the ability to survive without the Northern Hemisphere of Anglicanism?
That's an intriguing question. It's intriguing on two levels. If it were on the basis of numbers and leadership, it has the vitality. If it's purely on the basis of finances, it does not have the resources necessary to survive.
Now, that's the crux here, and we've talked about it many times, Bishop Ackerman. The money is in the Northern Hemisphere. In particular, a lot of the money is right here in the United States in the Episcopal Church, which is far out ahead of the Church of England on all of these issues, far more progressive than the Church of England dreams of being, at least in practice at this point. What are your thoughts?
I think you're absolutely correct. And for example, if one were to look at what's called the Instruments of Unity in the Anglican Communion, one of the bodies that is in that category would be the Anglican Consultative Council, and it's funded primarily by rich Americans. Moreover, there is a society called the Compass Rose Society, which was put together as a type of discretionary fund for the Archbishop of Canterbury, yet again funded to a large extent by rich Americans. And so one may very well be able to say, we want to listen carefully to what the Southern Hemisphere has to say, but I'm afraid it's a Jerry Maguire moment. Show me the money.
So what do you think happens? I mean, the plan is to fast track, and it sounds like there's nothing standing in the way, to fast track female bishops into the Church of England. What happens next? Do we follow the course of the Episcopal Church in the Church of England? Do we see openly gay bishops? Do we see a female Archbishop of Canterbury within our lifetimes?
Well, I think maybe. Here's the irony of all of this, is that while on one level one would say there's no relationship whatsoever between the ordination of women to the priesthood and the matter of homosexuality, the two of them really are, to some extent, related. Not just in the political sense of the escalation or the movement that goes from one change to the next, but symbolically speaking, the priest and certainly the bishop is a successor to the apostles, the priest as a representative of Christ at the altar is in relationship in representing Christ as the bridegroom, and the church is the bride. So therefore, what we do when we have a woman at the altar in relationship with Holy Mother Church, we wind up having, if you will, a lesbian relationship. And so, therefore, when we begin to mix symbols, we should never be surprised when the mixing of those symbols is to be seen in other sacraments and in other elements of the church.
One other thought there, and this comes from another guest we were talking about this. He pointed out when we were talking about Justin Welby's dark prognosis for the unity of the Anglican Communion, he pointed out that having a female bishop raises a real problem in the Church of England for those who are opposed to the ordination of women that still remain there. And his logic is, since bishops ordain priests, you no longer can simply walk into a Church of England congregation, see a female priest and say, no, I will not commune here. You can walk in and see a male priest, but you might be put in the position of asking him what bishop or bishopess ordained him. Is that a realistic assessment?
Yes, in my mind, it most certainly is, because now we're dealing with the matter of the validity of a sacrament. And traditionally, what the Western Church has said is validity of sacrament is contingent upon three points: form, intention, and matter. And if any one of those is altered, it calls into question the validity of orders. The other thing that we need to note is that classic Western theology has taught us that the priest is an extension of the bishop. So if a male bishop, for example, says that he doesn't really approve of the ordination of women, the mere fact that he would license them or have them in his diocese is tacit approval by virtue of the fact that that person is representing him to his people, and thus not offering to the sheep what the shepherd otherwise would have offered.
Bishop Keith Ackerman is vicar of St. Timothy's Episcopal Church in Fort Worth, Texas. He spent 14 years as bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Quincy, Illinois, and he's president of an Anglican reform group called Forward in Faith. Bishop Ackerman, thank you very much for your time.
Always. God bless you, my friend.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the secular Advent on television. The family gathers around for a unique preparation for Christmas that is the holiday movie. Terry Mattingly, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org, will be our guest right after this. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's Word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.